We're holding the second Mishnah on Tes Amud Beis, about 10 lines from the bottom. In the times of Tanakh, there were times when you were only allowed to bring karbonis in one particular place, when there was a Mishkan in the desert, later on when the Mishkan was set up in Shiloh, later on when the Beis Mikdash was built in Yerushalayim. And then there were some times in between when you were allowed to bring karbonis wherever you wanted, on what was called a bama, which means a high place. This was during the first 14 years after the Jewish people came into Eretz Yisrael, the 7 years they were conquering it, and the 7 years they were dividing it. The Mishkan had been set up in Gilgal, but during those years it was considered, instead of a full-fledged Mishkan, it was called a bama gdola, a big bama. So there was that. Then later on, after Shiloh was destroyed, Mishkan Shiloh stood for 369 years throughout the whole period of the Shoftim. After that, when it was destroyed, and then for the next 57 years also, first it was in Noiv, then the city of Noiv was wiped out by the whole story over there with Shaul and Noiv, and then it was moved to Givon and stayed there for the next 44 years. And during that time, twice in Jewish history, first for 14 years and then for 57 years, you were allowed to bring karbonis wherever you wanted on a bama, on a high place, a privately built mizbeach. Later on, by the way, after the Beis Mikdash was built, that kind of thing became osur. Nevertheless, Pasuk mentions over and over in Sefer Melachim that there was a problem. People kept on bringing karbonis on bamas because they got used to it. And unfortunately, a lot of times it ended up being a gateway to Avodah Zarah. That's a whole other issue. But anyway. So our Mishnah is going to talk about the difference between the Bama Gdola, which is the Mishkan when it did not have the full-fledged status of the Mishkan, or the Beis Mikdash, namely that 14 years in Gilgal, that 57 years in Noiv and Givon, versus the Bama Kana, versus everybody's private backyard Mizeach. Hello? The Mishnah says, "Ein ben bama gdola le bama ktana." There is no difference between the large bama and the small bama.
We're still in the ein ben.
"Ein ben bama gdola le bama ktana el psachim," except for bringing the carbon pesach, which the Gemara will talk about. It doesn't only mean the carbon pesach; it means carbon is similar to that. So, in other words, even when you were allowed to have private bamas during those 14 years and then 57 years, you were not allowed to bring your carbon pesach on one of them. Your carbon pesach had to be brought to the big bama. Gilgal or Nuv or whatever. As a matter of fact, actually, the Rambam originally in Sefer Mitzvah, the Rambam originally listed the mitzvah that the Torah says that you're not allowed to bring the Korban Pesach on a private bama. The Rambam originally listed that as one of the 613 mitzvahs. And the Sefer Achinuch got that from him. Later on, the Rambam changed his mind because he realized, you know what, but it's not a mitzvah for all time. There came a point, as the Gemara is going to talk about, after the Beis Mikdash was built, where you're never again allowed to make bamas. So therefore, it's a moot point. It's like the dinim, when Hashem tells Moshe, you know, there's certain rules for how the Mishkan should be carried in the desert or whatever. Those were a temporary thing. They're not meant as mitzvahs for all time. So therefore, the Rambam took it out of his listing.
Now, of course, we can't make
a bummer anyway. Yeah, as we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah and the Gemara on it. Yeah. So Zakhal, this is the general rule. Kol shem nidav and nidav, any carbon that can be brought as a neder or nedava, we talked about the other day. Neder is where you say, I obligate myself to bring a carbon. Nedava is where you say, I designate this animal as a carbon. Any such carbon, carved babama, can be brought on a bama ktana. So in other words, an ola, a shlamim, but kol she'ena lo nidav, any carbon that cannot be brought as a neder and a dava, carbon pesach was one example. You can't bring it in a dava. There's a fixed time for it. Other examples are chatas and asham.
It's an obligation.
Those are things which are obligated. Right, you have to bring them. It's not an optional thing. So those ain't a karav bama. Those cannot be brought on a bama kana. Those you have to bring to the bama gdola, to the Mishkan. The basic difference, by the way, between a bama gdola when it's called a bama gdola versus when it's called a full-fledged Mishkan is basically whether the Aron is there. During the 14 years when they're conquering and settling and dividing up Eretz Yisrael, the Aron was not kept over there because they brought it around with them wherever they were going to war. So therefore, the rest of the Mishkan where in Gilgal was not a full-fledged Mishkan. Later on, also after Shiloh, first the Aron was captured by the Plishtim, then when the Plishtim returned it, they brought it to Kiryas Yarim, and later on David brought it to Yerushalayim, but during that whole 57 years, the Aron and the rest of the Mishkan were not in one place.
So it was a
Bama Gdola. Yeah, we're going to talk about that soon in the Gemara, but yeah, what about it?
What they're talking about is allowing what?
It's saying that until you come to the Menucha and later on to the Nachla, you're allowed to bring Karbanos to wherever you want.
Any type of Karbanos is just...
That's what we're saying, only Nidiv and Nidiv. The Gemara at the end of Zvachim, there's several Mishnayos and pieces of Gemara that talk about all the details of this. The gist is, the Pasuk uses the expression over there that... since you haven't come al menucha v'al nachla, then ish kol ha'yosha be'enav. Anybody can do whatever's right in his eyes, which is where we understand from that it means only karbanos that a person brings because it's right in his eyes, because the person voluntarily wants to bring them, as opposed to a chatas, for example, a person doesn't bring them because ha'yosha be'enav, he brings it because he asked you. So that's the Torah that is not giving that dispensation. So the Gemara asks, Sochem betulo, you're telling that only the Korban Pesach can't be brought on a private bama? You just said that anything that's not nidir or nidav can't be brought on a private bama. Okay, we don't mean Pesach only, we mean other korbanos that are similar to the Korban Pesach. Mani Reb Shimon, so who is our Mishnah like? That would be only according to Reb Shimon. The Tanya, Reb Shimon Omer, Af Tzibur lo yikruvu el Pesachim, that even when it came to the Tzibur, even by the Bama Gdola in Gilgal and in Noven and Givon, they would only, when it came to, what about the korbanos Tzibur? Till now we've been talking about korbanos Yachid. The korbanos tzibur, Reb Shimon said, only lohi ak tzibur lohi kruva el pesachim. The tzibur only brought the korban pesach. V'chovet shekavur lahen zman, and the other obligatory korbanos which have a fixed time: the tamid, the tmidim, the musafim. Av chovet shein kavur lahen zman. But Reb Shimon says, obligatory korbanos of the tzibur, which there's no fixed time for. For example, the parhelam davashal tzibur, the case that you have where the Sanhedrin made a mistake in halacha. This was yesterday or 2 days ago, Rambam Gimel Prakim. The Sanhedrin made a mistake in passing halacha. Most of the Jewish people followed it, and then the tzibur has to bring a special korban. That kind of thing. It's an obligation on the tzibur, but there's no fixed time for it, because whenever the circumstances happen. So Reb Shimon says, on those, hacha v'hacha leikarev, those could not be brought either on a private bama or on the public bama. Those can only be brought on a full-fledged Mishkan or Beit Mikdash. So when our Mishnah is saying... Right, when our Mishnah is saying only Pesachim, meaning an other korbanos that are similar to the Korban Pesach, that can be brought on a Bama Gdola, that implies that we hold like Reb Shimon. Because if it was according to the Chachamim, we would say it's more than just Pesachim. We would say that the Parhelam Davashal Tzibur is another difference. It can't be brought on a Bama Ktana, but it can be brought on a Bama Gdola. Next Mishnah, the last one of the Ein Veins. Ein Vein Shiloh LeYerushalayim. There's no difference between Shiloh and Yerushalayim. So like we, you know, the capsule history I just mentioned. You had the Mishkan, again, you had the Mishkan in the desert throughout the 40 years. Then it was in Gilgal for the 14 years while they're conquering and dividing Eretz Yisrael. Then they set it up in Shiloh, in the territory of Shevet Ephraim. It stood there for 369 years. And during that time, we're saying Bamos were also. The Mishkan in Shiloh was considered a full-fledged Mishkan. The Gemara in Zvachim explains that actually it was kind of a hybrid between the Mishkan and the Beth Mikdash. The walls were made out of stone, but the roof, they still used the curtains from the original Mishkan. So then, again, then Shiloh was destroyed, the Oren was taken captive, etc. The Plishtim. So then again, they moved it to Noiv, then to Givon. During that time, the Mishkan is considered a Bamos Gdola. They could have private Bamos. Later on, after that, Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, and from then, and that's that, the Beis HaMikdash, the first, and then the second Beis HaMikdash, and eventually the third. So, Ein Bein Shiloh LeYerushalayim. There's no difference between the Mishkan Shiloh and the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. Except that when the Mishkan was in Shiloh, you could eat kodshim kalim, like shlomim, toida, b'chor, etc., and ma'isa sheni, b'chol aroya, anywhere, any place from which you can see Shiloh. Actually, the Gemara discusses over there doesn't mean that you have to be able to see, that you have to see that for the Mishkan, or you can see any part of the city, whatever. The Gemara discusses. No, Lav Dafka. I mean, it's in a mountainous area. I don't know if Shiloh itself is on a mountain. Or Yerushalayim, Lefnim and Achayma. Whereas in Yerushalayim, you were limited to eating these things only within the rule of Yerushalayim. V'kan, both in Shiloh and Yerushalayim, Kodshikodshim Necholim Lefnim and Achloim. The Kodshikodshim, the Chatas, the Asham, etc., can only be eaten within the curtains, meaning within the walls of the Azara. Different Mephoshim talk about why over here and in Ezra Makoyim and in other places we use the word Kloyim. A few different reasons. One is because that's how it was in the original Mishkan. Another reason the Gemara is going to talk about soon, that when they were building the second Beis Mikdash, they had to put up curtains temporarily so they had a chance to build the walls. whatever the reason, that's the standard terminology in Mishnayos and in the Gemara when it wants to talk about that something has to be eaten within the walls of the Azara, is lefenim min akloyim. Now, another difference between Shila and Yerushalayim. Kedushas Shila yesh acharei heter. The Kedusha of Shila, there's a heter afterwards. After Shila was destroyed, you're allowed to build bummers. Well, Kedushas Yerushalayim ain't acharei heter, but the Kedusha of Yerushalayim does not have a heter after it. After, even after the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, you are not allowed to build bummers. Tosfos discusses, we'll learn as we go through the Gemara, the question, does this mean that you're not allowed to bring korbanos anywhere, or theoretically, could you bring korbanos on the site of the Mizbeach, even though it's destroyed? We'll talk about that in the Gemara. We'll talk about that in the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, the Gemara says, Shemaiti, I heard from my Rabbeim, Shemakriven bebeis chonya bebizman hazeh, that you are allowed to bring korbanos in beis chonya nowadays. Beis Chonya, the Gemara explains at the Mishnah and the Gemara explain at the end of Menachos, the whole long story over there. The gist of it is that Shimon HaTzadik had two sons, Chonya and Shimi. Shimi became the Kohen Gadol. Chonya was jealous of him. The Gemara discusses how exactly this happened. To make a long story short, he tried to get Shimi in trouble. They eventually realized that he's the trouble, that he, Chonya, is the troublemaker. He ran away to Alexandria in Egypt. He built a mikdash over there. He built a mizbeach and started bringing korbanos over there. Actually, Tosfos discusses there that maybe he didn't make it for Jews, maybe he made it for the local goyim to bring korbanos. Whatever it was called mikdash Chonya. The Gemara actually discusses over there the question, the machlokas Tanoim over there, whether this Mikdash Chonya was dedicated to Hashem or Lahavdil was it dedicated to Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Yitzchak is saying, Shamaiti, I heard Shemakriven Beis Chonya Bezmanazeh, that you are allowed to bring Korbanos in Beis Chonya nowadays, meaning after the Beis Mikdash was destroyed. But practically speaking, the original Beis Chonya was destroyed a couple of years after the real Beis Mikdash. The Romans destroyed it, but he's talking about theoretically, and he's talking about if there was a similar kind of thing, if somebody were to build something like that nowadays, Rabbi Yitzchak is saying that he heard from his teachers you'd be allowed to bring korbanos there. Why? Kasava Beis Chonya Lava Beis Avodah Zarah. He holds that this Beis Chonya is not dedicated to Avodah Zarah. If it was, obviously he can. And number two, because of Kedusha Roshana Kitchala Shaita, Vlay Kitchala Asad Lava. Number two, he holds that the original Kedusha of Yerushalayim and the Beis Mikdash was only for its time, only as long as the Beis Mikdash is standing, and not for the future. In other words, therefore, he's holding, or is Rebbeim holding, that once the Beis Mikdash is destroyed, it's the same as after Shila is destroyed. Bamas become Mutter again. Beis Chonya is a Bama. That's what he's talking about also. I mean, when Chonya built it, it's true, that was definitely illegal because when the second Beis Mikdash was standing. But Rabbi Yitzchak is saying, nevertheless, even though it was built to Isser, if it's still standing after the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, which it did for a couple of years, you'd be allowed to bring korbanos there.
Even though it was in
Yisrael? Tosfos discusses the question how you can bring korbanos in Eretz Amim when they're Tomei Midrabanan. One thing, Tosfos says the whole concept of outside Eretz Yisrael being Tomei is only Midrabanan. So maybe when it comes to a place, yes, even the time. So Min HaTorah, you'd be allowed to bring korbanos there according to Rabbi Yitzchak, so therefore the Chachamim are not going to be Gozer Truma on it. Now, why is that? He says, because like this. The Pasuk says, Kile Basim, what you were quoting before, Yaakov, Kile Basim at Ata ala Menucha ve'ala Nachla. You have not come until now to the Menucha and to the Nachla, which the Gemara explains in Zvachim, Menucha zu Shila. The word Menucha refers to Shila. It was like a temporary resting place for the Shekhinah. And Nachla zu Yerushalayim. And the word Nachla refers to Yerushalayim, because like a Nachla is a permanent thing, so is Yerushalayim. It's a permanent place where from then on you can't build a Beis Mikdash anywhere else. Well, therefore, Rabbi Yitzchak says, Makish Nachla L'Menucha. The Torah is making a hekesh between the Nachla and the Menucha. The way everybody else learns is that there's no hekesh, it's just the fact that the Torah mentions them separately. The fact that the Torah mentions separately Ela Menucha, Ela Nachla, implies that in between there was a break, that in between there were those 57 years when you could build bummers. But Rabbi Yitzchak is going further. He's saying we're actually making a hekesh between those two places. And therefore, Ma Menucha Yesh Acharei Heter, just like when it comes to Menucha, when it comes to Mishkan Shiloh, after it was destroyed, there is a Heter. You're allowed to build Bamos and bring Korbanos there. Af Nachla Yesh Acharei Heter, so also the Nachla of Yerushalayim, after it's destroyed, you have a Heter to bring Korbanos elsewhere. Amrulay, so Rabbi Yitzchak Talmidim asked him, Amrit, did you really say that? Amrulay, so he said, no, I did not say that. Why? Because as the Gemara is going to explain in a minute, he realized that it can't be correct. As the Gemara is going to explain in a minute. Amar Rabba, Ha'olekim. So Rabba says, I swear by the Ebeshter's name. Amar, he really did say it. Ugmuna lamine. And in fact, I learned this statement from him. Umay time of Kahadabe. So why is he changing his mind now and saying, like, I never said this? Mishum kashed at Amari, because he realized in the question that Amari pointed out that the Mishnah contradicts this point. The Moisiv Rav Mari, because Rav Mari pointed out a stira from our Mishnah. The Mishnah clearly says, Kedushas Shila Yesh Acharei Heter, Kedushas Yerushalayim Ein Acharei Heter. That after the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, there's no Heter to build Bamos anywhere else.
You didn't know about this?
Tosfos asked that question. I mean, you expect the Amoraim are supposed to know all the Mishnayos. And anyway, the Gemara is going to end up pointing out there's actually a Machloikas Tanoim about this point. So Tosfos says that actually the Machloikas is not really the Machloikas about, which we're going to talk about soon, we have Machloikas, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, where the Kid Shal Asad Lava is, do we say after the Bais Mikdash is destroyed that you are allowed to bring Korbonos where the Mizbeach was? Or not. Maybe you need an actual functioning Bais Mikdash in order to do that. But everybody agrees that you cannot, in other words, Rabbi Yitzchok basically, not that he didn't know the Mishnah, but he thought that the Mishnah is only according to the opinion that Kid Shalah Asad Lava, that he thought that maybe if Lo Kid Shalah Asad Lava, then you're allowed to, but then he realized that no, actually, all of those, the various Tanoim that we're going to talk about soon, everybody agrees that that you don't have a Heter after your Shalayim. All it is the question is, are you allowed to bring Korbanot on the site of the Mizbeach after the Bais Mikdash is destroyed? Not whether you're allowed to bring anywhere else outside of your shalayim. That's for sure off limits. V'oitznan, and also we learn in the Mishnah in Tzvachim, mishbo'al Yerushalayim netzra bamos. It says when once they came and built the Bais Mikdash in Yerushalayim, bamos became also v'loy ha'ilahem oid heter. There was never again a heter for them. V'hi ha'itzel v'nachla, and Yerushalayim is called nachla. Which, when the prophet says "Kila basam ad alter alam nuchav alam nachla," nachla is Yerushalayim. So that's it. Afterwards, there's nothing else. So therefore, Rabbi Yitzchok realized that that can't possibly be correct that you're allowed to bring korbanos and beis chonya.
So he changed his mind. He knew about it, but he changed.
Right. However, the Gemara says tanoihi. It's actually machloekas tanoi. The Tanya or the Tanan, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Shamaiti kshahayu burning behechol. I heard from my teachers that when they were building the hechol, when they were building the second Bais Mikdash. Now Rashi points out a little bit of history over here. When the Kodesh made his announcement that the Jewish people can go back to Eretz Yisrael and rebuild the Bais Mikdash, this is 52 years after the Churban. It was 70 years. It was 70 years since Babel had become a world empire. So 70 years happened in that sense that Babel had fallen and the Persians and part of the Mada took over. So Kodesh announced that they can go build the Bais Mikdash. What happened? So they went. Indeed, they started rebuilding the Mizbeach and they started bringing Korbanos. But the prophet continues, it tells over there in Ezra that the local Goyim, the Kosim, whatever, were harassing them. They mastered on them to Kodesh and afterwards to Achashverosh, that the Jews are planning to rebel against you, etc. And the work was stopped. It took 23 more years. The work was stopped by Kodesh, by order of Kodesh, or maybe by order of Achashverosh. We'll get to over the next couple of days, the whole thing about Vashti being involved, whatever, anyway. So there was a period of 18 years when the work was completely stopped. So they're still bringing korbanos on that mizbeach, but the actual heichal itself was not built. Later on, it took four or five years for the Bais Mikdash to be built. But finally, eventually, you had a built heichal and a built mizbeach. Meanwhile, all that time, they're bringing korbanos on the mizbeach. So how do they do that? Rabbi Eliezer says, Shamaiti, Kshoyu Bonin Behechel, when they're building the Hechel, meaning during those 18 years and then afterwards during the years that it took to actually finish the building, Oisin Kloim LaHechel, Kloim LaAzara. They made curtains around the Hechel, around the space of the Hechel, and curtains around the Azara, because they couldn't build the actual wall. Except the difference is that with the Hechel, what they did is they put the curtains on the inside of the space that the Hechel would be, and the walls have to be built on the outside of those curtains. The reason is, Rashi says, because you don't want, the builders should not be walking on the space that's supposed to be the Hechel. Other Mephoshim add, you don't want them to be looking in, you don't want them to... So that's why you have the curtains, and then they're building the walls on the outside of those curtains. So let's say, for example, the inner space of the Hechel, for example, the inner width of the Hechel is 20 amos wide, so they'd make two curtains 20 amos apart. So, right, curtain to curtain is 20 amos, and then they'd be building the walls on the outside of those. That way they're not going onto the footprint of the Hechel when they're building. Whereas with the Azara, they put the curtains on the outside of the space where the walls are supposed to be, the outside of the wall footprint, because there's no problem. The builders can come into the Azara to build. There, Amar Rabbi Yeshua, but then Rabbi Yeshua continues, also in the same Mishnah, Shamaiti Shemakriven Afapi Shein Bayis, I heard from my teachers that you're allowed to bring Korbanos even though there's no Beis HaMikdash standing. Oichlin Kotcha Kotchim Afapi Shein Ploim, you're allowed to eat Kotcha Kotchim even though there are no walls or curtains around the Azara. Kotchim Kalam and Maisa Sheni Afapi Shein Choim, and you're allowed to eat Kotchim Kalam and Maisa Sheni in Yerushalayim even though the city does not have a wall. Because the original Kedusha of the Beis Mikdash was not just for its time, it was for all time. So therefore, in other words, Rabbi Yeshua is saying, you don't need Rabbi Eliezer, you're saying that they put up curtains in order to be able to mark off the areas, this is the areas for the Heichel, this area is for the Azara, whatever, in order to legally be able to bring Karbanos. Rabbi Yeshua is saying, you don't need that. Once you know the site of the Mizbeach and the site of the Heichel and so forth, it's good enough. Miklal, which seems to imply that Rabbi Eliezer has a like Kedusha loss in love, that Rabbi Eliezer holds that it's not, that the Kedusha was not forever. That the Kedusha of the, according to him, it seems the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash went away when the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So therefore, that seems to fit with this thing, that first we had Rabbi Yitzchak saying that you're allowed to bring Korbanos in Beis Chanya, and then he changed his mind. It seems to be, it fits with this Machlokes Tanoim. Although, of course, since the Gemara in the end says not, then the Mefarshim talk about Tosfos has a long discussion of it over here, and also other Rishonim also discuss there's a difference between, again, first of all, Tosfos said there's a difference between whether we're saying you're allowed to bring Korbanos elsewhere versus you're allowed to bring Korbanos on the spot where the Mizbeach is. Second of all, there's also the Rishonim talk about there's a difference when we say about Kedusha Rishona, L'shaita, or L'asid Lavoi, there's a difference between the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael generally, for example, as far as the dinim of Trumas and Maestras and all the other dinim that apply only in Eretz Yisrael, versus the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam, in fact, in Hilchos Beis HaBchiras, makes that distinction very explicit. He said the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael went away by the time of the first Churban, so during those 70 years afterwards they didn't have the mitzvah of Luyas Baret. When they came back to build the second Beis HaMikdash, particularly when Ezra came with his people, they were re-Makadosh Eretz Yisrael.
So the Rambam
and other Rishonim talk about the differences. The original Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, he says, depended on the conquest. Yeah, sure, and the Jewish people conquered Eretz Yisrael. So once it was conquered from them and taken over by the Goyim, well, then the Kedusha goes away. The second Kedusha that Ezra did, and so actually, okay, there is a different shita between the Rambam and other Rishonim on this. The Rambam says that, yes, the second Kedusha of Yeshua also went away, went away when the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. According to him, the mitzvah of Luyas Baret nowadays only did Rabbanim. Other Rishonim say that the difference is the Kedusha of Ezra's time depended on Chazakah, that the Jewish people are actually settling the cities of Eretz Yisrael. In that case, from Ezra's time until now, there have always been Jews in Eretz Yisrael, as opposed to the time between the first and second Beis HaMikdash, when there were no Jews living in Eretz Yisrael, or at least in parts of it. The Rambam says, though, so according to the Rambam, though, that at least when it comes to the din of Batei Ode Choyma, about which cities, which walled cities, have certain dinim that we talked about as far as houses in the cities, and the Mitzaroyim have to be sent out of them, according to the Rambam, there will be, when Mashiach comes, they're going to have to make a third Kedusha on those. The Gemara we'll talk about on Amud Beis. There were the cities that existed in the time of the first Beis Mikdash. There were the ones that existed when they first came into Eretz Yisrael, rather, when Yeshua and the Jewish people conquered Eretz Yisrael. There were the ones that existed when Ezra and his people came up. And then there'll be whichever walled cities exist when Mashiach comes, and those will be the ones that are designated as walled cities for those halachos for the future. Again, not everybody agrees with that. The Ravid in particular disagrees with that. But as far as the Beis Mikdash, as far as Yerushalayim and the Beis Mikdash, the Rambam says it's a whole different thing. That, the original Kedusha, the Rambam says never went away. He holds like Rabbi Yeshua. Why? Because the Kedusha of Yerushalayim and of the Beis Mikdash depends on the Shechina. And the Shechina never completely went away. No, because it's a different thing. The Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael depended on the Kibush, on the conquest.
And
not the Shechina. Not so much the Shechina. So, Amalei Rabbeinu Ravashi, Mimai. Who says that that's the underlying point of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua's machlokas? Who says they're even arguing? Dilma dekula al makdusha rishana kitchel shaita v'kitchel lasa lover. Maybe both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua agree that the original kedusha worked for the future also, so they technically didn't have to put up curtains at all. Umar ma'idishmi alei kama. So just Rabbi Eliezer is saying what he heard from his teachers, and Rabbi Yeshua is saying what he heard from his teachers.
As opposed to,
in other words, they're not necessarily contradicting each other. Rabbi Yeshua is not saying that they didn't put up curtains. He's saying they didn't need to put up curtains. Rabbi Eliezer, you're saying they put up curtains? Very nice, they put up curtains. They didn't have to. So you would say, even according to Rabbi Eliezer, why would they put up curtains if according to him you don't need them for the kedusha? Look, near Sabalma, they just put them up for privacy. It's not recovered there, but the place that the heichal should be exposed to public view. Nothing to do with the kedusha. Maybe even Rabbi Eliezer agrees that yes, even without those curtains, the heichal is still a heichal, the kodesh kedushim is still a kodesh kedushim, etc. So where do we find a machloikas, the Gemara is saying? You want to say there's a machloikas, you want to say, Rabbi Yitzchak's teachers had to have some source for their idea about Beis Chanya. If we're saying that you can't get it from the machloikas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, where are they getting it from? Elokihani Tanoi. So rather they get it from the machloikas of the following Tanoi, the Tanya, Amar Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yaisi, Lama Manu Chachamim Es Elu. Why did the Chachamim list these cities? In Erchin, there's a list there, the Mishnah list, a list. 8 or 9 walled cities that existed in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, that the halachas of walled cities apply to them. The dinim of Batei Arechayma, the dinim that you have to send mitzrayim out of them. Why do they list only these? Because when the Jews came up from Babel to Eretz Yisrael to build the second Beis Hamikdash, they found these walled cities, and so they declared them holy. But the original walled cities lost their kedusha when the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael went away when the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. Which so far, which means therefore that Rabbi Shmuel, the Rabbi Yaisi, is holding therefore that the kedusha was only a temporary thing. It wasn't the original kedusha of Eretz Yisrael didn't last for all time. But Uraminu, then we have a contradiction to that from another Braisa. What do you mean? There were only these cities? The mission is only listing 8 or 9 cities. What do you mean there were only those? The pasuk in Parashat Dvarim mentions when Moshe is summarizing land, the lands they conquered from Sichon and Og, he says that there were 60 cities, the whole province of Argoi, which is an area in the Galil, not in the Galil, in the Bashan, in northern Eber Yarden. Uchtiv, and the pasuk says, what about these cities? Kolela, Orim, Betzurot, these were all fortified cities, Chomagvaya, with high walls. So just in Argoi alone, there were 60 walled cities. In the rest of Eretz Yisrael, there were a lot more. Why is the Mishnah listing only a handful? So he says, why did the Chachamim list only these? Because when the Bnei Agola came up to build the Chachamim Mitzvah, they found only these cities still walled, the Kidshum, and they declared them Kodesh. So the Gemara asked, what do you mean, Kidshum? Hashta ha'ami lo tzrichel kedushi. The Mishnah continues by implying that you don't need Kiddush, because the Mishnah continues there in Erech, and after it lists these 9 cities, it says, let's learn 2 lines, and I'll actually, the Gemara itself will quote the Mishnah. Elo, what it means is rather, Matsuas Elo Manol. They found these, and they listed them. Not they declared them Kodesh. They were already Kodesh. These are the ones that they found still standing as walled cities, and therefore they listed them. You should know these are walled cities from the times of Yeshua ben Nun. But Veloy Elo Bovad, but it's not only those 9 cities. Elo Kol Shatavu L'Cham Esodes B'yod Cham Avitzecha. The Mishnah continues there. Any city, or the Brites actually, any city that you have a tradition in your hands from your ancestors, Shemukhefas Chaimim Mitzvah Yeshua ben Nun, that it's surrounded by a wall from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, Kol Mitzvah Zalal L'Noigin, rather than all these mitzvahs that apply to walled cities apply to it. Because the original Kedusha was Mekadosh it originally when Yeshua made them Kodesh and for all time. So therefore, we end up with Kasha Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shmuel. So we end up with a contradiction between the 2 statements of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yaisi. The first seems to be saying that it was temporary. That's why he says that they were only Mekadosh these 9, because these are the only 9 that were walled at the time of the when they came up to the second Beis Hamikdash. The other one seems to imply that no, any other walled city that they may have only listed these 9 because these are the only ones that came across. But if you find another walled city in Eretz Yisrael, which you know was walled in the time of Yeshua ben Nun, then it also has the same dinim. So the answer is, you have to say that there are 2 Tanoim who argue within what Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yaisi said. The Ibai Sema, or another possibility, you could answer, this second Braisa that we listed is not Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yaisi, but Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yaisi. The Tanya, we learned this last week. Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yaisi, Asher Loi Choma, when the Pasuk says about a walled city, Asher Loi Choma, which there's actually a Kriuk Siv over there, it says Loi with an Aleph, which means not, but we read it Loi with a Vav, meaning that it has. means, even though it does not have a wall now, but it had a wall originally, then it's still considered a walled city. So Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, in other words, holds that that as long as it had a wall in times of Yeshua, it's still considered a walled city. Whereas the other opinion would say that no, we have to look at whether it had a wall at the time, whether it had a wall in the time when they came up to the second Beis Hamikdash. So therefore, all told then, so we do have different opinions whether the Kedusha Rishonah was the Shaita or the Asad Mabai, and therefore, so that's what Rabbi Yitzchak and his teachers based themselves on in thinking that this makes it possible to bring Kavanas on Bamas, except that Rabbi Mari pointed out that the Mishnayos clearly contradict that, so therefore that's where we say that the Machloek, either that the Machloek only applies to Teres Yisrael as a whole, but not to Yerushalayim and the Beis Hamikdash, or that it has to do with whether you're allowed to bring Kavanas in the Beis Hamikdash, but not whether you're allowed to, everybody agrees you can't bring them anywhere else. For one thing, Tosfos points out, I mean, you know, part of the idea is we have various Mishnayos, including our own Mishnah, that says you can't bring that Kedushas Yerushalayim in Achrei Hetzi, you can't bring Karbonis anywhere outside Yerushalayim nowadays. We never find anywhere in Shas any Tana actually explicitly saying otherwise. That's why we have to say, it's very hard to say that the Machlokas that we said about Kedushas Yerushalayim, the Asad Mabai or not, that it should apply to that. Because we would have found some Tana who says, you know what, based on that, you're allowed to bring Karbonis outside Yerushalayim nowadays. The fact that there's no such Tana, only the Yitzchak teacher said it. That's what made it say that there must be something the matter over there. It can't possibly. It seems to be a consensus of Tanoim, and therefore the Amoraim can't argue with that, right? Now we come to the Drashas on Megillah Esther, which is going to take up from here till the end of the Perek, basically, with a lot of digressions, of course. Pasuk begins by Hibi Me'ach Hashverish. Amar of Levi V'Temer of Yonason. We have the following Masorah in our hands going all the way back to the Anshe Knesset Gedolah. Wherever the Torah uses the word Vayihi, it's an expression of pain, of tzoras. For example, Vayihi b'mei Achashverosh, Abba Haman. They end up tangling with Haman. Vayihi b'mei Shvoit HaShoftim, in the days when the judges judge, the beginning of Megillas Ruth, the next words, Vayihi Rav, Hava Rav, there was a famine. The pasuk says at the end of Parshas Bereishis, it happened when people began to increase. What happens? The people are acting very wickedly and have to bring them out. It was when they traveled from the east, the Dura Floga, then they decided to build up a city in the tower of Babel and all the disasters that came from that. They fought against the kings of Sidon. It was when Yeshua was in Yericho, we learned last week, what happened, he was accosted by a malach, and the malach had a sword in his hand, and the malach was giving him mussar, that you guys missed the Korban Talmud, you missed learning Torah, and the whole thing that we talked about back on Daf Gimel. We talked about then because they were busy besieging the city, and they hadn't brought the Aron back to the. Another example, by he Hashem es Yeshua, that later on in Sefer Yeshua, it says the Eibishter was with Yeshua, but what happens next? By Yimalo B'nai Yisrael, the Jewish people commit trespass by taking stuff from Yericho, that they were one of the old Jewish people, it was one person, Achon, but whatever. The Vayihi is a prelude to something like that happens. Vayihi ishechad minar Mersayim, you have it was that there was a man from Mersayim, from Elkanah, the father of Shmuel. What happens? New kies Chana, Vashem sogar Rachma, he loved Chana, his first wife, but Hashem had closed up her womb. There's the tzara that's associated with Vayihi. Vayihi kizok in Shmuel, it happened when Shmuel was old, v'loi hochabona v'drocha, the pasuk continues, his sons weren't following his ways, and the Jewish people ended up demanding the king. Vayihi drachav, David l'chol drachav maskil, David was successful in all his ways, but a few psukim earlier, Vashem Imer, and Hashem is with him, but a few psukim earlier, by his shol, Oyenis David, the shol had his eyes on David, he's looking at him negatively, he's jealous of him. By he, ki Yashav HaMelech HaVeisei, it was when the king, David, was sitting in his house. What's wrong with that? Because he thinks I'm going to build the Beis Mikdash. Nothing. And everybody comes and tells him, sorry, Rak Atal, Yisivna Abayis, you're not going to be the one to build the Beis Mikdash. So every Vayihi we're saying so far, presages something. Because of Bathsheba? No, not because of Bathsheba. In context over there, the pasuk says that the Eibush told him it's not yet a time of peace. The Beis Hamikdash is only supposed to be built. Kile batam adalta ala menucha bala nachla, the pasuk recorded on Amud Aleph, only v'shabtam lo betach, only when you're living securely, then v'hoya hamakim. You're not yet living securely. You beat a lot of the goyim around Eretz Israel, but there's still a lot more. In Shlomo, most times, there'll be peace, he'll be the one to build the Beis Hamikdash. He was very disappointed, but yeah. He still used that disappointment to good effect, though. He for the rest of his life he worked on preparing things for the Beis Hamikdash. He amassed treasures that were going to go towards building the Beis Hamikdash. He set up the Mishmaros, as we learned at the end of Tainus. He put together the plans for the Beis Hamikdash, then transmitted them to Shlomo when he got older. He even wrote the dedication song with Meshuchan of the David. They prepared as much as he was able to. Yeah. Anyway, why should the word Vayehi mean Saras? So on one level, it's just because the word Vayehi itself, Vay means woe, and He also is an expression of a mourning. Kinim v'hegv v'hi. So the word Vayehi has in it woe and lamentations. There's another idea in Monet Halevi from Rav Shlomo Alkabeth, the one who wrote L'Chadoidi. He wrote a Pirush on Megillah Esther called Monet Halevi, very interesting deep Pirush. He explains the idea is that Vayehi is the word basically is Yehi, which is the future. You put a Vav on it, you put the Vav Ahipuch, it makes it into the past. So it's saying like Vayehi represents something like you don't want it to ever happen again. Let's make it Vayehi. Let's make it it was and it'll never have to happen again. As opposed to Vahoya, he says, is the other way around. Vahoya, the Medrash says, is always a Lashon Simcha. Why? Because there you have the other way around. Hoya means it was. Vihoya makes it Lashon Asid. I want it to happen again and again. So therefore, Vahoya is. In Chassidus, it talks about, there's a couple of places, in Kesef Shem Tov and a couple of other places, it talks about the idea that Vayehi represent it talks about the idea that Vayehi represents the past world, the Olam HaTov, and therefore it's not such a positive thing. Whereas Vahoya refers to the future world, the Olam HaTov, and therefore that's a thing of Simcha. Yeah, that too, yeah. Also, for example, the Medrash actually goes through a lot of other examples. Here, the Gemara is going to go through a couple of examples where it seems that Vayehi is not a sad thing. There's a Medrash also in Medrash Tanchuma, where one of the Amoraim, not Reb Levi, I don't remember who it was, they ask him a bunch of other examples, and he shows how each one of them, even though on the face of it doesn't seem to be a negative thing, you find there is something in it. One that it talks about considers a lot in a number of places is Vayemer Lekimihi Ur, Vayehi Ur. But the original Ur, it's not the original Ur. The original Ur had to be hidden away for the Tzaddikim Lasid Lavai. All we have is the Ur that comes after the Tzimtzum. That's a sad thing in a way that we couldn't have that original Ur Shalifna Tzimtzum.
When we mentioned Vayehi
Yav Chadim, Chadvan Svarim Ailey, I didn't. The Gemara didn't have to mention every example. Okay, so the Gemara asked why. Vayehi Yemashmini. The Pasuk says it was on the eighth day of Chanukah HaMishkan. V'tanya, and we learned in the Braisa, Oysayim HaYisasim Chalifna HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chiyem Shenivru B'Shamayim Ba'aret. That day was as happy before the Ebishter as the day when heaven and earth are created. So you see that Adarabah, the word Vayehi there, you're using for Gzeir Shava to show what a happy day it was. The answer is it wasn't so happy after all. Hoshchiv Nadav Aviyu, after all, Nadav Aviyu passed away on that day. Okay, what about that it says it was in the 480th year from Yitzhak Mitzrayim when Shlomo started building this Mikdash? Nothing negative about that. What about it says it was when Yaakov saw Rachel? Nothing negative over there. Okay, later on it turns out that she was barren, but there's many things happen in between. The Vayehi is not an immediate thing before, yeah.
So that he was not going to be buried with her.
Okay, that's one reason why he cried. Yeah, okay, the Gemara is assuming that there's various other reasons why he kissed her. Also, Rashi says on the Pasuk, a different reason why he kissed her is because the people were making fun of him. Are you talking? You know, we're theistic people around here. What are you doing kissing a lady in public?
So therefore,
one. So there's many different reasons he was crying. But
why
yeah.
Did he kiss her?
Because they were relatives. Actually, the Alter Rebbe explains up in Chassidus, the Perek Mem Hei of Tanya, the deeper idea of Yaakov kissing Rachel is that you use Rachamim, which is Yaakov's Midah, to be Ma'orah, you Ma'orah Rachamim on the Neshama, that it came from so high up, and now it's low down on the world. Rachel represents Knesset Israel. So you Yaakov kisses Rachel, and then you use Rachamim to come close to your Neshama, and then Vayisa is Kol Vayek, and then you cry to be Ma'orah Rachamim for the Neshama, and that's a way of connecting with Abraham.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, well, Vayipal Tavar Binyam. Yeah, okay. What? Yeah, okay. I mean, there's a different thing. They were crying over each other's about the mikdash. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. etc. throughout the whole Maaseh Bereishis. Sure. And in many other examples in Tanakh where it says Vayihi and it's not necessarily a sad thing. So, Omer Rav Ashi, you're right. Kol Vayihi Ika Hachi Ve'Ika Hachi. Wherever it says Vayihi, okay, it could be this way, it could be that. Rav Levi or Rav Yonason is saying that Kol Mokum, it's not necessarily a given, it's, well, not always, many times, but there are exceptions. But Vayihi Bimei Enel Loshen Sar. But when it says Vayihi Bimei, then definitely it's a Loshen Sar. Why? So Manoisa Levi goes further with this thing of his about Vayihi. He says because Vayihi Bimei means that you're associating it with time. Time, everything decays with time. So therefore, when you're adding the word Bimei, associating it with time, automatically means it's something temporary and therefore a sad thing. Marshall says a little differently. The fact that it has to say Bimei, if it just wanted to say Vayihi, it could, Vayihi, it happens. Vayihi Bimei, the extra word Bimei, teaches us that the word Vayihi there is meant in a negative sense. So, how many are there? Chamisha Havu. There are five places in Tanakh where it says Vayihi Bimei. Vayihi Bimei HaShverish, where they had trouble with Haman. Vayihi Bimei Shvayt HaShoftim, where they had the famine. Vayihi Bimei Amrofa, where they had the world war, the four kings against the five. And actually, the Medrash says it was more than just a tzara that it was a war. The tzara, the reason why the Torah goes to the trouble of saying Vayihi Bimei over there is because actually, why did those four kings, Amrapha, Melech Shinar, and the rest of them, why Bechlal, and what are they traveling halfway around the world to go and attack five cities? Because really what it was is they wanted to draw Avraham into the battle and end up killing him. So that's the Vayihi Bimei. It wasn't just a tzara that there's a war going on, it's a tzara that they're engaging in war in an effort to get rid of Avraham.
Which they didn't succeed,
but still, Vayihi Bimei, but still, they were going into it with that purpose. Yeah. Also, by Vayihi Bimei Shvayt HaShoftim, it's not just that there was a famine, it's the fact that there was Dor HaShoftim HaShoftim, where the generation where the people judged their leaders, where the leaders themselves were corrupt. So those are three. The fourth one is Vayihi Bimei Achaz. It was in the times of Achaz. The pasuk introduces that there was a coalition against Malchut Yehuda. The king of Aram and the king of the Ten Shvatim got together and attempted to overthrow Achaz and put a puppet king on the throne instead. David sends Yeshaya to tell Achaz, don't worry about them. It's more than just that. Again, the Medrash says it's more than just that. I mean, it was a terrible thing that they're trying to do, but that's not reason enough to use the special word Vayihi Bimei. The Medrash says it was more than that. Why did this whole sort of happen? Because Achaz was a king who was a Rasha. Why was he called Achaz? The Medrash says over there, Achaz means to grab a hold of. He grabbed a hold of the shuls and bat Medrash and closed them forcibly. He said, I don't want that there should be Torah among the Jewish people. What's the best way to eradicate it? Make sure kids can't learn Torah. He means joy, he means tzioshim, was his expression. We talked about it before, yeah, that if there's no kid goats, they'll never be adult goats. Like, if the kids don't learn Torah when they're little, they'll never... So he prevented people from learning Torah. So that's the Vayihi Bimei Achaz.
Children don't learn, there's no kids.
Yeah. And the fifth one, Vayihi Bimei Yehoyakim. It was in the times of Yehoyakim, which led... The fifth one is Vayihi Bimei Yehoyakim, which led in the times of Yehoyakim is when the Golos and the Churban began. Yehoyakim himself became a vassal of Nebuchadnezzar, and later on Yehoyakim himself was taken prisoner by Nebuchadnezzar and died on the way to Babel, and from then things went downhill.
How long before the
Churban? Yehoyakim became king 22 years before the Churban, and he ruled for 11 years. So those are the five times. So we see that every one of Vayihi Bimei indicates tragedy. Another one, Amar Ablevi, Dovah Zem Asodas B'Yadena Mavisena. We have the following fact as a Basoda in our hands from our ancestors. Amot Tzva'amasya Achim Abu. Amot, father of Yeshaya, Chazon Yeshayahu ben Amot, and Amasya was one of the kings of Yehuda, were brothers. Which means that Yeshaya, when he's going and telling Nebuah to the kings of Yehuda later, he's their cousin. He's the cousin of the kings he's talking to. What's the point? So what do we need to know that for? Okay. Because the Gemara says, Kihod the Amr of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amr of Yonason, because we can learn from it what Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni said in the name of Rabbi Yonason, Kol Talashik Snur Bevet Chamiya, any daughter-in-law who's sneer-stick in her father-in-law's house, Zoycha v'yotin men and Malachim and Nevi'im, she will be Zoycha that kings and Nevi'im will descend from her. Menolon mitomer. How do we know that? From Tomer, the daughter-in-law of Yehuda. Dichtiv, what does the pasuk says? Where the Tamar had, what happened over there? Yehuda, she married to Er. Er died. She was married to Oinon. Oinon died. Yehuda pushed her off from marrying Shelah. He doesn't want Shelah to die as well. What happens? She really wants to have children by Yehuda or by his family. So she disguises herself as a Zayna. By Yehuda, the pasuk says, Yehuda saw her by Yachshvel a Zayna, and he thought she was a Zayna. Ki kissed upon her because she covered her face. What do you mean? Because she covered her face, she thought she was a Zayna. That's backwards. Other than that, Zaynas uncovered her faces.
Yeah, uncovered, right.
Yeah. Ella, what it means is, Mishum, Ella, what it
means.
No, okay, the Ramban on the Pasuk says that the one possibility is that yes, in those days, but the Gemara is taking it a different way. Ella, Mishum, the kiss upon her, but what it means is like this. Because she was always sneistic, because she always kept her face covered when she lived in her father-in-law's house, V'loi Hava Yodala, and Yehuda therefore did not know what her face looked like, therefore, and now all of a sudden she has her face uncovered, he didn't recognize her. Or some other Mepharshim say a little bit differently, that what happened is he knew Tamar always keeps her face covered, so when he sees a lady sitting over there with her face uncovered, he never would have thought in a million years that it's Tamar, because he knew that Tamar is always a sneistic woman.
So
that's two possibilities. Either he didn't know her face, or even, let's say, no, but for example, you could have, let's say, he might have thought he recognized her voice, but now it can't possibly be her. Why would she be sitting here with her face uncovered when she's always been covering her face? Whatever it is. So he ended up having relations with her, and Zochta v'yotzim menu malachim and neviim. She was Zocha because of her tzniyistikite, that kings and neviim descended from her. How do we see that? Malachim mi-David, the kings, the dynasty of kings come from David, who are descended from Tamar, the pasuk says at the end of Megillas Ruth. And neviim, where do we see that neviim descended from her? Just what we just said. Amar ablevim, asaros v'yadenim, avaseno, omet mamasi achim ha'u, that omet and amasi ubrah, zuchtiv chazen yishayo, ben omet. And as the Gemara is going to say later on, that whenever a Navi is mentioned with his father's name, it means his father was a Navi as well. So if it says Chazon Yishayahu ben Amoitz, it means that Amoitz was a Navi as well. So there you have already two Naviim who are descended from Tamar, Amoitz and his son Yishayah. Ve'amar Rav Levi, since we're mentioning things that Rav Levi said, here's another one. We have the following thing by Masorah from our ancestors. We learned this at Shkolim and in Yuma. Mokum Oren Enim in Amidah. The place of the Oren in the Kurdish Kedoshim does not take up space. The Kurdish Kedoshim in the Beit HaMikdash measured 20 by 20 amos. You'd measure from any one side of the Oren to the wall, you'd get 10 amos, even though the Oren itself is supposed to be 2.5 by 1.5 amos in size, but it didn't take up any space. We learned similar in the Brai. So, Oren Sha'asa Moshe Yeshle Esther Amos Kol Ruach, the Oren that Moshe made, he had 10 amos of empty space on every side of it. So the whole room was only 20 amos wide. And the Pasuk says, V'lifnei Advir to Esther Amos Oruch, in front of the Dvir, which means the Oren, or actually Rashi says that Dvir means the Mechitza, the wall that separated the Kurdish from the Kurdish HaKadosh. We learned in Yoma that in the first Beis HaMikdash they had a wall there in Amasik. In the time of the second Beis HaMikdash they weren't sure whether that wall belonged to the Kurdish or the Kurdish HaKadosh, so therefore they had two Paruchs with an Amah between them. Anyway, so in front of the Dvir, the Pasuk says, Esrim Amah Oruch, there's 20 Amas in length and 20 in width. Uchtiv, and then the Pasuk says, the wings of one kruv, those two big wooden kruvim that Shlomo made, the wings of one stretched out 10 amos, and the wings of the other one stretched out 10 amos. So you have to ask, Oren Gufa, hey Chava, where did the Oren itself fit if the kruvim are taking up the entire 20 amos space? Actually, Mepharshim talk about that maybe the Gemara shouldn't be quoting this pasuk over here, maybe the Girsa and the Gemara should be. Yeah, right, that's what they ask. So what's the problem? The Oren is underneath these wooden kruvim, what's the problem? Therefore, they have other gear sites that were quoting other psukim that implied that there was actually space of 10 amos around each side of the Aron. Forget about the wooden kruvim. The Aron itself, we're saying, the Gemara also in Baba Basra, and we learned also in Yoga, talks about whether the kruvim themselves didn't take up space because if all the wings of them took up 10 amos space, where's the room for the body of the kruvim if the whole thing is 20 amos wide anyway? The Aron Gufa Hechel Habakoi, where would the Aron itself be standing? So you see that it must have been standing there with Derechnes. Well, one idea is explained in Chassidus that the Oren is where Yesh and Ayin meet. The Eivishter is the real Yesh. The world is the real Ayin. Although to our eyes, it looks the other way around. The world is a Yesh, and the Eivishter is Ayin. The Kodesh Kodashim is where they meet. So therefore you have Yesh, but not Yesh at the same time. There's an actual Orem there, but it doesn't take up space.
Really, Yesh doesn't exist.
Yeah. Now the Gemara is going to go, we'll start with some of them today and continue with more of them tomorrow. The Amoraim, each of these Amoraim that we're going to discuss, wanted to give a drasha on Megillas Esther. And what he would do is, he would begin with a pasuk from someplace else in Tanakh and use that to shed light on the events of Megillas Esther. And you find a number of Midrashim are structured that way. You have the beginning of Eicha Rabbah, for example, you have a bunch of psichtas where they'll quote a pasuk from someplace else in Tanakh and explain how it relates to the events of the Churban, how it relates to what it says in Eicha. It's sort of, in a way, it's sort of like the structure of a Maimach Siddus. You know, a Maimach Siddus will begin with a pasuk or a Maimach Chazal or something, and then it'll use that as a springboard to explain some concept in Siddus. So, Rabbi Yonasan Pasach Lapischa Lahai Parshasa Mehacha. Rabbi Yonasan used to open up this parasha of Megillas Esther. When he would darshan on Megillas Esther, he would open up with the following pasuk. A pasuk from Yeshaya, V'kanti aleim, V'goyim, the Ebershter says, I will stand up against them. This is the nevuah that Yeshaya is giving, how eventually Malchus Babel is going to be destroyed a couple hundred years after his time. He says, V'chrati l'Babel shem u'sha'ar, I will cut off from Babel a name and a sha'ar, V'nin v'neched, n'um Hashem. So what does all this mean? Shem zaksav, the word shem refers to the script, that the script of Babel stopped being used, where they in Babel in those times, they were in cuneiform. After the kingdom of Babel was destroyed, then they gave up using that. It changed to other script. Sha'ar zaloshin, the word sha'ar refers to the language, that the language also went extinct. Which Tosfos says, what do you mean the language went extinct? We still, you know, we learned Gemara in Aramaic, adayim hazeh. Tosfos says it doesn't mean the language of the common people. Yeah, the common people spoke Aramaic. That's, you know, that still continued to be spoken. We're talking about the royal language. In whatever it was, I mean, maybe Sumerian, whatever it was. You know, in a lot of countries around the world, they used to have the royal language was different than the common language. In Russia, for example, in the time of the Tsars, you know, the common people spoke Russian. The intelligentsia spoke French. Similar idea.
But the current still
speak our. Yeah, they still speak a form of Aramaic. Yeah. Okay, so So shem zaksav, sh'or zaloshin, nin zemalchus. The word nin, the simple meaning of nin, is a grandchild. But here the Gemara explains that nin means malchus, because meloshin lefneshem is yinoin shmoi, which means that her rule. V'neched zu Vashti, and when it says v'neched, which means a grandchild, this refers to Vashti. So this pasuk gives us an
insight.
So in other words, the Eved Shteya is saying that every vestige of Malchus Babel will be abolished, will be gone, and the last vestige of what happened after Malchus Babel was destroyed, even after the language and their script and whatever stopped being used, you still have Vashti around. She's married to Ahasuerus, but what happened? She got killed, and that's the end of Malchus Babel. That's the end of anything of Babel in the world. So therefore, we use that as an introduction to Megillas Esther to understand the magnitude of the next. Marshall, by the way, explains it a little differently. That we're saying about Ksav and Loshen, it doesn't mean whether they became extinct or not. It means the kingdom of Babel was like a low down kingdom. They didn't even have a script of their own or a language of their own. They had to borrow their script and their language from other neighboring nations. Which archaeologically, you know, you find, Taka, they used cuneiform, which was invented by the Sumerians a couple of thousand years earlier, and they used Sumerian, they used Akkadian, whatever, they used a bunch of different languages, not their own language of Aramaic. They used, you know. No, we're talking about what? Ahasuerus killed Vashti. We'll get to that later. But here we're just saying that the Navi Yeshaya is predicting that by saying that Vanechad, that the grandson will be, that even the grandchild will be gone. Meaning Vashti. Another one, Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni Patach Lapischa Lahai Parshas Me'achar. Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni used the following as an introduction to his Drasha on Megillas Esther. Pasuk says, also in Yeshaya, Tach, it's in the Haftarah for fast days, Tachas HaNatsut Yala Barosh, instead of the Natsut, they will rise up the Barosh, which is a stately, beautiful kind of tree, V'Tachas HaSirpod Yala Hadas, instead of the Sirpod, the simple meaning is that Natsut and Sirpod are both kinds of thorn bushes, like low-down, cheap trees. So instead of the Sirpod Yala Hadas, the Hadas will come up. Like I say, it's a pasuk in the Haftarah in the Haftarah Dirshu that we say on fast days. We also quote this line in the Slichos for Tainus Esther because the Gemara is going to explain now that it has to do with the events of Megillas Esther.
There's no Hadass before that?
No, obviously there was. It means that the simple meaning of the pasuk is like instead of where there's now thorn bushes, there'll be a broish, there'll be a beautiful cypress tree, and there'll be a Hadass. Yeah. What does it mean? tachas anatzut means tachas haman arasha sha'asa atma avadazara. The word natzut refers to haman arasha, who made himself into an idol. Elsewhere in Yeshaya, we find him using the same word natsut in connection with nahalul. The word nahalul over there, Targum Yonason translates it, and Rashi agrees that nahalul means the place where they praise, Meloshon Hallel, their Avodah Zarah, a place where they worship Avodah Zarah. So natsut, in the Gemara's understanding, it also means a place, also means an idol. So instead of a Nasrut, instead of this Chutzpan Yaakov made himself an idol, Yala Berosh, there'll be a Berosh, and what is a Berosh? Zem Mordechai, Shenikah Rosh L'chol HaBesamim. This means Mordechai, who is called the Rosh, the head of all the Besamim, all the spices. Berosh, and it's short for Besamim Rosh. Why? Shenema V'atachach L'chol Rosh. And what's the first of those spices that Moshe was told to take to make the Shemana Mishra? Mordor, or Metagumin, and Meiri Dachi. The translation, Targum Onkelos translates the word mordro as meiridachi, clean, pure myrrh. That's where the name Mordechai comes from. So we see that Mordechai can be called b'samim rosh, the first of all the spices. Dro means clean or free-flowing or whatever.
It's freedom.
Yeah. So therefore, so far we have, instead of the Nasut, instead of the Avodah Zarah, Haman, there'll be the Brosh, there'll be Haman, Mordechai, who's the first of all the spices. And Tachas HaSirpod, instead of the Sirpod, means Tachas Vashti HaRasha, Bas Benosha Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha, instead of the wicked Vashti, the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha, Shesorach Refid HaSpeis Hashem, the word Sirpod, the Gemara's understanding, as a contraction of Sorach Refid. Sorach means he burnt, Refid means the cushioning, like the bedding. The pasuk described in Shashirim describes the Mishnah metaphorically as its bedding is made out of gold, meaning the Kodesh Kedoshim, the Beis Hamikdash, where the Eibishter's Shechina rested. So instead of the Sirpod, instead of the one descended from the family who burnt the Beis Hamikdash, instead of that, Yala Hadas, they'll come up the Hadas, Zu Esther Tzadekas, Shenikras Hadassah. This is Esther, who's also called Hadassah. Shenema Vayihi Omen Hadassah. Pasuk continues, V'hayol Hashem L'shem, this will be for a name for Hashem. What does this mean? Zumikra Megillah. This means when we read the Megillah, everybody praises Hashem's name. The Hashem's name itself is not in the Megillah, but we say Hashem's name when we say the Berachas on the Megillah. La'os Olam, La'os Yikaris, when it says it'll be a sign forever that will never be cut off. Elu Yimei Purim, this means the days of Purim, which last forever. A famous thing that even when all the Rambam quotes, that even when all the Yom Tov will be bottled, the Ma'aseh Mashiach, Purim will never be bottled. So therefore, this pasuk gives us a capsule description, sort of what happened over there. Another one, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi pasach lapischa lahai parshat mehacha. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi used the following as an introduction to him. The pasuk says, "V'hoya in the Torahcha, v'hoya kasher sof Hashem aleichem laheti beschem." It'll be that just as Hashem was happy about you to do good for you, ken yosef lahara eschem. So yosef, it sounds like it means he'll be happy to do bad to you. Question is, is Hashem really happy when the Rishayim have a downfall? But the Pasuk says, the Pasuk describes how in the time of King Yehoshaphat, a coalition of Goyim came to fight against Eretz Yisrael. Some of the say that when Kapitel Pei Gimel of Tilim was written, anyway, so they went to fight out against them, and the Pasuk says, as they're going out, as Levim are going out in front of the armed men to sing to the Eivishter, they would say, "Hodu Lashem ki lo'olam chatei." Ve'amar Rabbi Yechon, "V'ne'mal lo'nema ki tov vodah." Do you hear this? "Hodu Lashem ki tov ki lo'olam chatei." Why is ki tov missing? Because the Eibishter is not truly happy when the wicked have to fall and be destroyed. So even though these wicked goyim are about to conquer Eretz Yisrael, still it's not ki tov. It's not a completely good thing. Ve'amar Rabbi Yechon, and also Rabbi Yechon says, "My dechtiv lekarav ze al ze kol aloyla." What does it mean by Kriyas Yamtiv? It says that this did not come close to this all night. It means Bikra Malach Hashoros lo mashira. The Malach Hashoros wanted to say shira ze al ze. It's like Bekara ze al ze v'yamar. Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu. But David says, "How you talking? My tiyada tevin bayam. My handiwork by the Mitzriim. I made them also. They're drowning in the sea. V'atam I'm shira. And you're saying shira. So what do you mean? What does the pasuk mean? V'ha yakad ken yosis Hashem. What do you mean? Hashem will be happy to do bad." So, what it means is, Amar Rabbi Elazar, who ainu sof aval acherim meisis. Hashem himself is not happy. If it was, then it would say yosus. Yosis is transitive. It means he will make others be happy. But dekanami, yeah, that's what it means. But dekanami, can yosis like siv yosus. Shmaminos. Hashem himself is not happy, but other people can be happy when the Rishayim are destroyed. Right? Yes.
This means will make others happy.
Yeah, so therefore, so Rabbi Shobel Levi used this as an introduction to the Megillah, that what happened? The Jewish people are threatened with destruction. This is Ken Yossi's Hashem. Hashem himself is not happy for the Jewish people to be destroyed, but he allowed Haman and his gang to be happy over it until eventually they got destroyed. Actually, Meforshim say that what Rabbi Shurban Levi meant by this is also the very fact that they were happy about it is a reason why the Eved Shtei eventually finished them off. So, you were allowed to be happy. It doesn't mean you had a mitzvah to be. The Eved Shtei can be upset at them eventually that they were happy over such a thing. Another one, Rav Adba Bakana Pasach Lapis Chalai Parshas Me'acha. The Pasach says in Kehelas, La Adam Shetoyb Lefon of Nosan Chachma Vadas Vesimcha, to a person who is good before Hashem, Hashem gives wisdom and understanding and simcha, Zem Mordechai Atzadik, this is talking about Mordechai. When it continues the pasuk that to the sinner Hashem gives a purpose to gather and to assemble a whole fortune, Zeham. What happens? Loss is for Tovlus, Nehelakim, that it should end up being given for good in front of Hashem. Then Mordechai and Esther. This is what happened with Mordechai and Esther when they took over Haman's property. Dichtiv, Batasim Esther, Mordechai al-Beis Haman. So we see that all of Haman's gathering of that wealth was all for the purpose of going to Mordechai. One of the Mepharshim says an interesting idea on this, why are we associating this specifically with Chochmah and Das of Mordechai? We're going to have, as we go into further in the parak, when we get to the part of the story where Ahasuerus is mad at Vashti, what happens? He calls together the Chachamim Yodei Itim, which the Gemara is going to explain actually means Jewish Chachamim, and they said, let's not get involved. One way or the other, we're going to get in trouble. Either we say she should be killed, and then when he sobers up, he's going to be mad at us, or we should say he's not going to be, or we'll say she's not going to be killed, and then he'll be mad at us now. So they said, you know what, we're not getting involved. What happens on the other hand? On the other hand, Haman gets involved. By Mumuchan is Haman, that no, Vashti has offended everybody, you need to kill her, you need to get a new queen, etc. What was his purpose in that? He figured he'll get his own daughter to become the new queen, and then he'll be the king's father-in-law. Imagine what riches and covet and everything he'll get. So Haman had that, not Haman, Mordechai had the sense, he had the Ebesha gave him the Chochmah Vadas to stay out of the whole thing. Whereas Haman got into the whole thing because he wanted more Osha recovered. What happened in the end, when Ahasuerus ended up hanging Haman, part of it wasn't just because he was angry at him for threatening Esther and all. He had it against him, the fact that all those years before he had called for Vashti to be killed. So therefore, he ended up, that ended up being contributing to his death. No, it was the first time, but later on, at the end of the Megillah, when Ahasuerus orders Tluhuwalam, it wasn't only that he's mad at him for what he did to the Jews and to Esther and all, it's also he's been holding a grudge against, he was holding a grudge against him all these years because of what he did with Vashti.
He regretted it.
Oh, right away, the Megillah says that he regretted it. Zachar is Vashti v'Esther Shalasasa, right? And he's all upset until they tell him you need a new queen. Yeah.